Thank you so much for tuning in to listener-supported WDRT 91.9 on your dial. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Dr. Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not bad. Are you staying warm?
Yes, actually. Yeah. Yes.
How warm is it in Milwaukee? We're kind of getting a heat wave today. I think it's maybe going to hit 20.
Yeah, we have 27 today.
Oh my gosh.
I know. The only reason I know that is because I need to change out one of my headlights and I've been waiting for it to warm up a little bit.
Nice. You're on the other side of the state where it's a bit warmer. Anyways, so what's up for us? You know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about the dietary guidelines. Right?
Why do we disagree about food?
Yeah, why do we always disagree, right? So, you know, this is the kind of thing that you've got a whole bunch of different people involved in something, and we look at the same evidence or we look at the same information, and yet we seem to agree on nothing, right? And we've got official guidelines, we've got different countries that disagree. Right, and now we're just in the new United States dietary guidelines was released in January, so that's every 5 years, so it's 2026 to 2030 or something, you know, whatever those 5 years are, and it's a bit different, right? It's a bit different than what it's looked like before, but. But again, I think we should take some time and kind of look at that, right? So,
how do we come to those?
Yeah, how do we come to it? And is it really that there's just unclear science? Or is it really kind of where we focus our attention? Yeah, right? So I tend to think it's more of a focus issue, and that kind of determines things. But anyway, so let's spend some time on that, right? So RFK is certainly out there, and he's saying a lot of things, right? And he's certainly saying something that I agree with, right? He says, eat real food, right? Mm-hmm. And but along with that, right, there's certain things that have maybe some confusion with that. So red meat is now back, right? It's now back at the sort of the top of the pyramid. Have you seen the guidelines? You know that we've had the food pyramid in the past.
I have. Not only have I seen them, but people in my circles, at least, are very happy with it. So that's been an interesting, they're happy to see that that grains have reached a smaller portion, as is what I hear. I have seen it, but I remember that was one of the things. And like you said, red meat's back on the plate.
Yeah, and when you look at it, right, so we've had the food pyramid, and we've had, you know, we made that food pyramid really kind of confusing, where we put, you know, sort of vertical lines, or I don't know, vertical, right, following the slope of the triangle, right, or the pyramid. So we kind of confused it, and then we went to the food plate, right, because the food pyramid's too difficult, and now we're kind of back to the pyramid, and then we inverted the pyramid is what it is now. If you look at it, right, so you can go online, and I mean, it's pretty impressive the way that they do the whole website and how you can access the information. I mean, I like that. But they've turned the pyramid upside down, right? So now you've got meat on top, meat and fat, or, you know, dairy in one group, and then you've got fruits and vegetables in another group, and then you've got grains at the bottom. But it's really sort of interesting, right? I look at that and I'm like, okay, well, is meat all the way across the top? It's not. You know, I think it's kind of like we could turn that pyramid all around and it's still sort of the same. My impression of it looking at it is it's just the triangle divided into three parts, right? And it's just the two parts are at the top, right? Or you would say it at the bottom of the pyramid, but it's at the top because they turned it upside down. And then the grains are at the bottom. But really, it's kind of split between meat and fruits and vegetables on the top, right? So it's not quite as impressive as maybe we think it ought to be. But certainly we get this idea that it's, you know, eat real food, right? Which I certainly agree with.
You're right, though, about the servings, actually. Yeah, if you do just move them around and put them back into an upside-down pyramid, or, you know, the other way, it is pretty much similar.
It's not that different, right? It's just that red meat. So, but what I would say is certainly the movement away from a more plant-based diet has been completely, you know, taken off the pyramid, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't see beans mm-hmm. on there. Beans are probably on there. I don't have that up in front of me, right? But
I think they are.
You've certainly had that more in the past, right? And I would say the scientists certainly think that there's an aspect that going more plant-based, more beans, you know, more plant-based protein may be beneficial.
Well, they have nuts in two different places.
Or are you looking at it right now?
Yeah, they have a walnut and an almond in one place, and then it looks like they have a peanut in a shell along with, are those legumes? You know,
yeah,
what
probably
I mean?
Legumes. Like maybe, where are they? Yeah. Are they like kind of below the fruits and vegetables on the right side?
Absolutely, on the left side actually.
On the left side.
Fruits are on the right side. Vegetables are also on the right side above it, and then on the left side is, I think it's beans and legumes, and nuts. Like, what is that?
And that's, so just explain, there's the red, where's red meat on there? Or where's meat?
Top left.
Yeah, top
like
left.
Like right under the words protein, dairy, and healthy fats. And there's a giant chicken and a salmon, you know? I mean, there's a lot of meat.
Yeah,
and I think
there's
hamburger in a container as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And an egg and shrimp.
So you kind of go down that toward the bottom, right? And you're angling in, right? You're angling kind of like a filter. And then, like, butter and oil is kind of underneath that, right? It's not quite at the top of that. Am I correct
on
this?
The butter and oil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the left. That's the left side? Do I have this right? It's the left
yep,
side?
Yep.
And then the right side has fruits and vegetables at the very top, right? So the biggest? Is that right?
Well, fruits and vegetables are going from right above, you know, there's like a line that says whole grains, and that's what I was talking about. People in my circles are like, look at that. There's some oats, there's a bowl of white rice, and there's a loaf of bread, and that's it. And then right above that loaf of bread is fruits. There's banana, grape, orange, strawberry, blueberry, and then apple. And I don't know what that is. It's maybe a potato, but anyway, and then it goes up into vegetables, lettuce, tomato, squash, carrots, peas, beans, broccoli, avocado. So fruits and vegetables are almost a solid half of the upper portion of the triangle, which is, you know, most of it,
except for those three
representations of the whole grain.
Yeah, are they trying
which,
to...
Which, by the way, how are they saying a loaf of bread is a whole grain, though?
Well, they don't make that distinction. That's a whole nother story. I don't know that we want... Well, we could talk about that for probably a half hour, right, on whole grains. I think I've talked about that as well, right?
You have. When I'm we just talk noticing about, that it says whole grains right by a loaf of bread.
Yeah, well, so ultra-processed, right? We'll talk about that because I definitely want to talk about processed foods versus ultra-processed, and that's kind of where we'll look at the whole grain situation.
Yeah.
Flour, right? So it's a difference between flour and stone ground wheat and, you know, wheat berries kind mm-hmm. of thing. Mm-hmm. So is there sort of a blending? I mean, I looked at this. I mean, I just looked at it this morning, kind of a blending, like when, because it's kind of like you've got the meat sources and then you've got the oil, which is going to be more, you know, concentrated kind of thing, butter, that kind of thing, which is sort of underneath that. And then going to the right, do they kind of blend that into plant, into legumes from that or not? Like, is there sort of an overlap?
No, the legumes, which I'm assuming that's what's under the peanut shell.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is.
Is on the left-hand side. Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the left-hand side. So it's in that protein. It's in the protein.
Correct.
Bin.
Yep.
Yeah, gotcha. Yep. And it's just sort of above the butter, but
grains.
Below the red meat. Oh, above the grains.
Yep. You go, as you go on the left-hand side up from the three representations of whole grains, you've got some bowl. It looks like rice and beans, honestly. It looks like a bunch of adzuki beans or kidney beans on top of a bowl of something white. And right next to it is a peanut in its shell. And then what look like almonds, but almond is already represented above it. So I don't know if those are just legumes. And then you have butter, walnut, almond, shrimp, tuna, yogurt, egg, milk, and then the three different meats, the burger, red meat, and the steak, really.
Yeah, so maybe my
giant chicken and then cheese.
Yeah, so maybe then my one-third isn't quite right, right? I mean, that whole grains is still certainly smaller, right?
Like,
but understand...
The whole grains is way smaller. It's like the very tip, and there's only three things. Vegetables and fruits make up one half of the upper part of most of the pyramid, and then the protein, dairy, and fat make up the other half of that big part of the pyramid.
Yeah, okay. So maybe if we're just visually looking at that, we'd say it's at like, what would we say, one-third? Not in thirds. Like maybe a sixth, and I don't know, and I would get into details on that. But regardless, right, the whole idea is that red meat's back, right? Meat is back. And they're certainly making suggestions that that RDA, that we want more than the RDA, right? RDA is 0.8 grams per 0.8 grams per kilogram of ideal body weight, which they're saying like 1.2 to 1.6. Would they put numbers with that?
Yeah, and the fact that it's right by the words, you know, carrots are right by the words vegetables and fruits. That's very prominent.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And the steak is right by, you know, steak, cheese, and a whole chicken.
Rotisserie
chicken.
Yeah, there you go. So big change there, right? So that's one thing, you know, alcohol, the other thing. So alcohol is really not on that pyramid. Well, it's not. So alcohol is, you know, out. I think that they've certainly gone a little bit more. We need, you know, a little bit more, what would I say? Like we need to really address this and reduce our alcohol content. So a little bit stronger than it's been before, but I would still say it's still pretty weak. That's an attenuated message when we compare it to the United Kingdom, right, to the UK guidelines.
Wait, alcohol is in the food pyramid?
No, it's not in the food pyramid. I'm just saying in the dietary guidelines. So the dietary guidelines is more than the pyramid. It's all the data goes with that.
Oh, guidance. Right? It's guidance as well. Okay.
Yeah, it's the guidelines. They just want a pictorial, you know, want that picture representation. Anyway, so I mean, that's just kind of my broad spectrum, right? So alcohol, they're a little stricter on, but still, in my opinion, not strict enough. Of course, that's me.
Well, it says the previous guidelines were a recommendation of one drink a day for women, two drinks a day for men, and the new guidelines remove specific day limits and instead advise broader moderation.
Yes, because there's no safe alcohol consumption, right? So starting to say one drink and two drinks is fine, they've removed that. They're just trying to reduce it, but they're, you know, the message a little watered down. But that's another piece, right? I think that's a big piece that we can certainly talk about. And then the other one, you know, sort of the elephant in the room is the ultra-processed foods, right? So the ultra-processed foods are, you know, maybe a problem, right? But the government, with the United States government, will not come out specifically and say, get rid of ultra-processed foods, right? They kind of...
Well, and of course they can't, right? Because don't they have lobbyists that would be...
Yeah, of course. There's a lot of vested interest with that, right? So they're going to be... Mm-hmm. They're going to kind of sugarcoat it a little bit, no pun intended. Maybe sugarcoat isn't the right word, right? Maybe we coat
it. It's more like just avoidance by omission.
Correct. And the other thing to understand is that the guidelines aren't just about what the evidence says, right? So we say, oh, this is science, but it's about really a political document, right? It's about values and systems and all this kind of thing, right? So that's really what the intent is there. And I think it's important to understand that there's, you know, sort of two different groups at play here, right? There's the Scientific Review Board. And that's all, those are all scientists, right? These are scientists that are, you know, they know how to read research, they know how to crunch numbers, they know how to look at that, right? They're nutrition experts when it comes to science. They know how to write a scientific paper, right? Mm-hmm. And they write a review, right? They review guidelines, but they're not writing the guidelines, right? They're really just an advisory group. And they're, you know, they put that information together, right? And they're theoretically independent, right? But of course, everybody's got their biases.
So are you saying that it would probably be more interesting from the perspective of what is actually being tallied and what's actually being studied? It would be more interesting to read those notes than what the government came up with in the end, because it might be more broad and specific at the same time, and
Yeah, I think that you got to read the literature. You got to read the science, right? So when you start reading a scientific report, this gets into really statistics. It gets into meta-analysis. It gets into how they're comparing trials. They're really sort of justifying, right? I mean, really, their incentive, and this is important, right? Always consider what somebody's incentive is, right? I think I've told you this before. Like, my incentive is not to get bad emails from my patients. Like, that's a big incentive of mine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I do things so that doesn't happen.
Right,
especially
right.
If
it
I
makes
get somebody
perfect sense,
a ketogenic
actually.
Diet for 2 weeks, right? Because they want to strangle me, right? Anyways, but consider the incentives, right? So the scientific review board, they're scientists is what they do, right? They're researchers. Really, I wouldn't say clinicians either. Not really any clinicians. Maybe on RFK's, he's got an advisory group too that there's a... they're all PhDs too. I don't know how many are actually practicing mm-hmm. clinicians. And again, is that what you want? Do you want a practicing clinician or do you want somebody that really knows the science? But regardless, incentives. So scientists, they're rewarded or their incentive is that they want accuracy. Yes, scientific accuracy. And on some level, publication as well, right? So in research world, it's publish or perish, mm-hmm. right? So that's really what their incentive is, right? Whereas when we start looking at government agencies and the people that actually write the guidelines, their incentive's totally different, right? So what's the government care about? What do government employees care about? They care about stability, right? So it's like, well, let's not rock the boat. Let's not upset other people that are important to consider here, including the food industry, yes? So, you know, that's really sort of the government aspect. And keep in mind, right, we have the best government money can buy. Lobbying is very powerful in this country, and it carries a lot of weight. But regardless, that's sort of and those are the people that are actually writing it. And then we could talk about the food industry, right, who I think deserves a large part of the blame. And the food industry really, their incentive or what they're going to resist is they don't like category level condemnation, right? They don't like things to say, don't eat this, right? Mm-hmm. So their incentive is they don't really want the government to say, eat no ultra processed foods, right? Brazil says that though, but the United States doesn't. But anyway, so let's just consider that that's like the incentives of the groups, right? And then I said the scientific review board. So they write up a scientific document, which you can get on there. This is all public information. I can't remember where, you know, if you look through those documents, I think there's like four documents that are listed on the website there. And you can read the literature, right? It's really, I like it, right? That's the kind of stuff I geek out about. But, you know, how do we translate that? Like, what are you going to tell somebody, right? This is the piece then that's where the policy document, the actual guidelines are then written by a combination, right? It's both the Department of Agriculture as well as the Department of Health and Human Services, right? They get together and write that, right? That's the final document or what we're releasing to the public, right? And this and the importance of the dietary guidelines is, like, do you follow the guidelines because the government tells you? Are you kidding me, right? It's almost like what I've kind of been like, what the government tells me, I do the opposite, right? But, you know, I'm a skeptic.
Although I imagine public schools, you know, and other forward-facing institutions that have some sort of desire to follow suit, to be supported by the public, that they're following suit, you know, that I imagine would be
right.
A big deal.
That's who it applies to. School lunches, right? School meals, public school meals.
Of, right?
For sure, this is something they're going to follow dietary guidelines. The SNAP and WIC, right? SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, WIC, Women, Infant and Children, right? Government-sponsored programs definitely are following dietary guidelines. And then military feeding, right? What we feed to the military is also based on that, right? So that's what the...
Prisons?
Yeah, prisons exactly. So this would be like who's affected by that? right? But the general public, you read those things and you're like, well, I'm just going to do the opposite or whatever. I mean, it does it hold weight? But
do whatever you've been doing.
You do whatever you've been doing, right?
Whatever's working.
Yeah. Now, you know, the confirmation bias is that, wow, I've been saying eat real food all along. And now, wow, they're actually saying eat real food. And then I'm like, well, it's not enough. So that's the moving the goalpost fallacy, right? So they do something and then you're like, oh, it's not good enough. You got to keep doing this. Yes. But for all intents and purposes, I mean, I really think that saying eat real food is a good thing. Yes.
And I'm going to jump in here and thank all the listeners for tuning in to WDRT 91.9 on your dial. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath. Go ahead. I can't believe it's already been 20 minutes.
Yeah,
oh my
wow.
God.
Yeah, I got a lot. We talked for a long time about this. Anyways, but what you can certainly see, you can find this in the media too, that some of these scientists that are on the advisory committee, they're not really happy with the guidelines. Right. But wait, you're the authors, but they're really not the authors. Right. So this is what's important to understand. They're just writing. They're reviewing the science. That's what they're good at. They then give that to the government and the government sort of puts things together. Right. And again, it's not that RFK has changed everything. It's like a nuance. Right. So there's kind of like, where are we going to focus our attention? And actually, the document that's on there on the website is really good because it lists what the scientific advisory committee comes down to. And then they have a, you know, it's a like kind of a graph. And it's not, I don't know, a checklist. And it says, is this addressed by the dietary guideline? Yes, sort of, or not at all. And you can see that, and you can see that the scientific advisory committee definitely was on more plant-based proteins, that kind of thing, and you can see that the dietary guidelines really didn't incorporate that at all. And I don't know that it's stated, but there's a checklist on there. I really like that, right? I mean, that's certainly transparency. At the very least, they're being very transparent about things, and they're being very transparent about what conflicts of interest are as well. So, like I said, there's this dietary advisory committee, but there's also a committee that RFK put together that didn't write the guidelines, but sort of who he like looked at to also take the information from the scientific advisory committee and kind of look at that and consider that. And that's where you're going to see big change. You know, that's where you're going to see varied people, right? This is where you're going to see people that are on more of the low carb end of things. Like Jeff Volek, for example, is on there. He's at, I think, Duke. No, he's not at Duke, North Carolina. I know he's a big keto guy, right? He's done research on keto, right? And so you can see that he's not on the advisory committee, but he's on the committee that's sort of advising the people that are writing the guidelines. So again, it's typical government and bureaucratic, you know, so much bureaucracy here, right? But you can see right. that, and again, the transparency, maybe you just get lost because you're like, I don't want to read anymore, but it's all there and kind of what potential conflicts of interest are. And you can see that RFK, the committee that he, the people that he selected to sort of, to give him guidance are, you know, definitely on the other side. They're not plant-based. This is where the meat industry is going to be happy. The dairy industry is going to be happy. And you see they're sort of represented on this. On this other committee, right? So it's like, wow, wait, who's doing what here? Anyways, so the thing is, some of these scientists that are on that dietary advisory committee that actually wrote the science, yes, they're not very happy, right? They're upset. You can find this certainly in the popular press, and they'll talk about how the dietary guidelines are a problem and how it was actually written. Right. And there's things that they're upset about. Right. And I'll just give this kind of an overview. The first one is the ultra processed food language. Right. Which I want to spend time about. They're also somewhat upset about the saturated fat. And to talk about that, you know, for just a moment. So saturated fat. Right. So there's guidelines is less than 10% of your calories is saturated fat, which they've kept in the guidelines, but now all of a sudden you've got red meat at the top of the list, right? So now you're saying, well, eat more meat or, you know, eat real food, and those are foods that are going to contain a lot of saturated fat. So there's almost like there's a controversy here, like, well, how am I going to eat meat and keep my saturated fat content under 10% of my calories, right? So the scientists, which they looked at that in detail, they're not overly happy about that. They're not.
What do they want instead? Less meat or more saturated fat?
Well, yeah. So the issue has always been plant-based, right? Choosing protein sources that are lower in saturated fat to begin with, which you're going to get from plant-based, you know, plant-based protein from legumes, from soy, from, you know,
nuts. They think it should be more balanced in that way, that you should, you know, not eat as much meat and definitely
right, because red meat's going to take you over that saturated fat limit pretty quickly, right? Eating butter, drinking whole milk, which are, you know, in my book, real food, but it's just a conflict here. Right, so it's just kind of like, yeah, but wait, the science says that we should be keeping our saturated fat as low as possible, or low, let's say low, and that means we're going to want you to choose foods that are lower in saturated fat to begin with. But again, this is this, you know, nutritionism aspect, right? So saturated fat, is it a bad guy or is it a good guy? Right, the scientific advisory committee basically says it's a bad guy, and RFK and others saying, well, maybe it's not that bad, but there's still the guidelines. Still, you still look at it on that document; it's still less than 10%. It's just, you know, I don't know how that's you're almost, there's a kind of double speak there. But anyways, that's something they're not happy about, right? They can be upset about. And then the alcohol risk framing too, which I want to spend more time on, right? So how do they frame that message? Because the information we have now is, you know, there's really no safe level of alcohol. And that means one drink a day, two drinks a day is not what you want to be saying, right? Because that's giving, you know, that's saying you can drink instead of saying, hey, we need to reframe this risk perspective. But again, the advisory committee would say that they're not being strong enough on that. But perhaps most important on there is the ultra processed foods, right? So this is what I think we should spend some time on, right? So ultra processed foods, the language that's in the document or in the guideline, right? So basically the scientists, pretty much everybody I think, would agree that ultra processed foods are a major driver of chronic disease, right? And this is moving beyond the fat, salt, sweet thing, right? This isn't just saying we're blaming fat, we're blaming salt, we're blaming sweet. We now got to blame, like, how these foods are actually produced and what's in these foods and are they even foods, right? And where we run into problems is that there's just a mechanism beyond the nutrient content, right? Because now we're making foods that are what? Hyper palatable. We're creating foods that encourage people to eat more frequently, right? We are creating foods that give you more of a dopamine fix, right? So when they're creating flavors and they're creating, you know, chips and that kind of thing, they're deliberately doing things because they want the repeat customer. They want you to continue to eat, or, I mean, honestly, to buy their food. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a reward signaling. And perhaps the biggest problem with this is it's a displacement of real food. Right. Because when you choose an ultra processed food, the question is this a food or is it not a food? And is this really eating real food? For example, protein powder is a perfect example. Right. Mm. Or protein bars. Is that real food? Mm. Protein powder? Last time I checked, I don't know, I get protein from powder. I mean, I got to eat something that's got it. Like, I got to chew it. And I need hydrochloric acid, and I need to, like, you know, that I'm eating a food substance that has that in it. Instead of now, it's a powder, a protein isolate. And do you want to look at how big that market is in the United States?
Wow.
And again, yeah. What's the push these days, right? I mean, keto sort of lost its luster. Deservedly so, but what's kind of replacing it? Oh, the high protein diet. You got to go on a high protein diet, right? Just eat more protein, because actually a ketogenic diet, strictly, they don't want as much protein in it, because eating more protein throws you out of ketosis, which is, you know, in my world, who cares? I don't care if you're in ketosis or not. I care about how you feel, right? That's what I'm using, rather than what's your urine stick telling you whether you're in ketosis or not. Anyways, so this is this displacement of, you know, real food, and now we're using protein powder because we got to get our protein level up, and we're not going to do it by eating eggs. We're going to do it by making a smoothie, and our smoothie contains, you know, the protein isolate, and then, oh, maybe we eat these super fruits, right? This I can take a tablespoon of this and it's got like 22 servings of fruits and vegetables in it in like a tablespoon. Wait a minute. You know, I'm sorry, but that's not the same as eating 22 servings. I'm exaggerating here.
No, yeah.
You know, eating 22 servings of fruits and vegetables. I mean, if you eat 22 servings of fruits and vegetables, what's going on? Oh my God, I can't eat 22 servings. I'm going
to
blow up.
To follow up
right?
with your feeling question, how would you feel even if you could?
Yeah, so we're concentrating that, yes, because it certainly sells. And the idea is, well, I don't get my fruits and vegetables, so I can take this magic powder and get it. I'm sorry, that's an ultra-processed food. That's not the same as eating food. But it's huge, right? Huge market for that. Anyways, so maybe we spend some time on defining ultra-processed foods. Like, let me ask you, like, what's your definition of ultra-processed food? I mean, I put it on our little list here so you can cheat, but...
I mean, I'm not looking at the sheet, a basic criteria would be recognizable. So funny story that you should say the powder thing for a minute, before I started eating all this steak, and I was still eating a more macrobiotic fare, I was in Whole Foods and I saw this, you know, all these greens, right, in a powder form, right? I don't even remember because I threw away the container and I put it in a jar. And now I still put it in my smoothie because I don't want to waste it, but I don't have any illusions that I'm not actually eating kale when I put that in my protein, not my protein shake, in my smoothie for the day. That if I can't recognize it, right? If it's in a powder form, I have no idea what the original form is unless I read the packaging. So a whole food is something where you can look at it and say, that is a banana, that is a tomato, right?
Yep.
That is a steak, that is a, you know, I recognize it. It comes in a one ingredient form that is actually recognizable.
Yeah, so let's call that real food, but let's actually on, you know, the group one scale, but we're talking about that. But what about, how would you compare when we talk about processed food versus ultra processed food, right? Always curious to me, like, do we just define things and now all of a sudden processed food is okay? Or what are we doing defining that? What do you think about that when you hear ultra processed food?
Yeah, well, like when you take an oat and you put it through a machine that flattens it, again, it's kind of recognizable from its original form as an oat groat. And now it's just a flattened oat groat. To me, that is processed. When you sprinkle oat flour, you know, into a recipe for muffins, now you've got an ultra processed food because it is now no longer, it's been completely fractionated.
Yes, yes, you're right. So let's, I'm going to use a definition, or I'm going to use what, and actually there's a, what's called the NOVA is what is being used, NOVA Food Classification System. And funny enough, that was designed by scientists in Brazil. And Brazil has the best food guidelines in the world, at least that I'm aware of. I don't think that I've read everybody's. I'm relying on other people to filter that. But anyways, NOVA, and it's capital N, capital O-V-A, right? All capitals. And it's not an acronym. People think it's an acronym. It's not. Oh. NOVA is, I think, the Portuguese word or the Latin word or something. It means new. Right, so NOVA
means
new.
It means what?
New. Brand new.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, that's just what the signification is there. There's not an acronym. But anyways, they have four groups, right? And again, you don't hear NOVA at all in the United States, right? Nothing on the dietary guidelines says anything about NOVA. So NOVA, there's group one, which is basically unprocessed or minimally processed, right? Minimal processing. So what that means is now we're making a food perhaps edible, perhaps safe, or perhaps storable, right? And the processes that we would do is we would wash it, we would cut it, we could freeze it, we could dry it, we could pasteurize that. That's interesting. Pasteurization is considered group one. You know, my personal opinion, I may put it in group two, right? Or but regardless, right? So that's
they probably just figure that they're taking something out of it. They're taking the fact that it may spoil or have bacteria.
To make it safe. So if we're doing something to make a food safe, that's considered minimally processed. And again, you're going to see the food in the form that you recognize it, right? You're going to see fruits and vegetables. You're going to see meat, milk, fish, beans, rice, oats. Now, that's interesting. So freezing, so you freeze a blueberry, you know, they're going to call that unprocessed, right? So that's, but you still recognize the blueberry in that, right? Mm-hmm. So we recognize that as a food from nature, like you said, right? That's unprocessed. But maybe there's, you know, even just washing it, right? So washing the food is considered, you know, some minimal processing. Okay, and then we go to group two. So this is now really processed culinary ingredients. So these are things that we cook with, but we really don't necessarily eat alone. At least that's the classification system that they're using. So that would be things that we would press, we may refine, we may mill, right? So this would include things like oils, butter, sugar, salt, for example. But so somehow we've got a refined culinary ingredient, but we're using that to make other things, right? We cook with them. We don't eat them by themselves. So something that we add to foods. Group three is then what they call the processed foods. So now that's where it's preserved or enhance a real food using simple additions. So this would include things like canning, fermenting, baking,
smoking.
Curing, smoking, right? So that's now we're going a step further, right? So this would be the processed food. And usually it's 2 to 3 ingredients, right? So we're not going to see a whole laundry list of things.
Yeah.
But something to really, that's going to be cheese would be a processed food. Canned beans, fresh bread would be a processed food. Canned fish, right? But I think the intent here is it's still clearly derived from a whole food. Like, you can tell that. So that's group three. And then finally, group four, the ultra-processed foods. Right, so that's now the creation of some kind of industrial product that's shelf-stable, that's hyper-palatable, that's convenient, yes, and
Da-da-da.
Most importantly, highly profitable. Right, so if you take a food, right, I mean, think about that. I mean, you said it was kale, was it kale powder? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Did you say
kale? I mean, it was like, you know, chlorella and chlorophyll. Yeah, yeah. And
what's the shelf life on that?
What
do you think the shelf life is on that powdered stuff that you've got?
I'm sure it was at least 2 years.
Yeah, let's say 2 years.
Away the packaging, but
how long is kale gonna last? 2 years? No.
Honestly, fresh wise, 3 days.
Yeah, right, exactly. So you got it. You got to eat it. We got to do something with it right now. That's not what the food, you know, and that's fine and good, and that's why you go to the grocery store and got to go to the grocery store every 3 days. Or luckily here in, you know, Viroqua, I can go every day, right? I can just get what I need for a meal because it takes me 3 minutes to get there, right? So
well,
that I don't.
That was always the famous thing that I knew about Italians, right? They had their little basket and they would go every day to the market and see what was fresh, and then they would make this amazing dinner. I always wanted to live in Italy.
Yes. Time. It's how much time do we have? And it's just part of the process. You know, they actually did. I spent time in Seattle, right, where the public market that's downtown Seattle and people that live on the islands out there. What are the islands there? I can't remember. But they would, you know, buy their food. They'd just buy, and then they'd go to Vashon Island or wherever they live and take the ferry out and, you know, have their meal or cook what they need to and then come back. And it was certainly more that way, right? Little markets where you're buying kind of specialty things. It's not, you know, Walmart. It's not the big box store where you can get everything. But, you know, convenience and time is a big deal, right? Especially when you don't have time, especially when you have neither one of the primary people in the relationship is fundamental job is to cook food. It's like you're an income earner, I'm an income earner. And then who's going to do the cooking when and how and where is the shortcuts going to happen? Is it where the shortcuts happen? Yes. Anyways, ultra-processed foods, right? Highly profitable. So there's going to be a lot of resistance if somebody's making a lot of money. Like, how much money are you making off selling fresh kale? I mean, you make money. You know, how much do farmers make at the farmer's market, right? And again, farmer's market is, you eat the farmer's market when the farmer's market is there. When the farmer's market isn't there, you got to eat something else, right? If you're eating locally, you're not eating kale. You're not eating blueberries. I had blueberries this morning, or not this morning, just this afternoon. Where'd those blueberries come from, right? Chile, for sure. They're organic. I mean, organic Chile blueberries. I wouldn't eat them in Wisconsin 100 years ago. They weren't available. This is, you know, luxury right. item, whatever. And that's a real, you know, minimally processed food. Anyway,
and
so
I'm going to jump in and thank the listeners again. This is WDRT 91.9 listener supported radio. You're listening to the Skeptical Naturopath.
Thanks, Christina, for keeping me keeping me honest, or at least on a time frame.
So, yeah, right, 17 minutes. Sorry.
17 minutes. That's what we got. All right, get to it. Okay, so we got stage four, group four, right? This is the words that we don't like, right? Fractionation, you said that. Recombination, additives, preservatives, additives for flavor, for texture, for color, for mouthfeel, right? So this is the list of things that that you've heard. Modified starches, protein isolates, emulsifiers, flavor enhancers, artificial sweeteners, colorants. Heck, I'd put natural sweeteners on here, or natural flavorings on here, right? Just because it says it's natural, that does not mean it's not an ultra-processed food. In fact, it is an ultra-processed food because they added a natural flavoring. I think I've told you this story that I have three patients that stopped drinking LaCroix water and their headaches went away, right? And it's just natural flavorings. Well, what's that natural flavoring? Well, the government allows them to just put natural flavoring on the label, but we don't know what it is. And you could call LaCroix. They're not going to tell you. Anyways, natural flavoring on the label, ultra-processed food. And anyways, so these are things that we consume a fair amount of, yes? And this would include, of course, soda, packaged snacks, candy, frozen meals, protein bars, protein shakes. Are there some protein sources that are better than others? Perhaps. But again, it comes down to how much is it being processed. And if it's in powder form, it's processed, right? Ultra processed. And really, the definition here is there's no intact food that remains. I mean, and think about that too. Like, are Wheaties an ultra processed food?
Yeah, because again, they had to be powderized and then reformed into that flake.
Yeah, that doesn't. What exists in nature that looks like a Wheatie? What is that?
Right.
I mean, what does that look like? Like a leaf? Like a bark?
Have you seen the cornflake bush, Paul? Have you seen the cornflake bush?
The cornflake bush.
When it flowers, it's literally golden. Get it? Get it?
The Wheatie tree, yes. But, you know, completely ultra-processed foods. And again, these are foods that did not exist before. Do you remember what my time frame is? Do you remember my mantra? The rule of what year?
Pre-1869.
Just remind
okay.
you that because that's when margarine came to market. It'd been available for a while. The military was using it. The French military was using it. But that's when it kind of became commercially available. And also when the milling in the Twin Cities really started happening, right, where they're fine milling flour, General Mills and Pillsbury. And they created the technology to finely mill. So now they're able to take wheat and turn it into many other things instead of just taking wheat and grinding it and making it into bread. Right. Or maybe a cake or something like that. But that's, you know, very limited on what you can do. Now we've got cereal. Now we've got Bisquick. Now we've got Betty Crocker. Now we've got all these things that happen with food industrialization. Yes. But problematic. Yes. Ultra processed food. And is that where we need to spend our attention? Right? I mean, should we
What do you mean?
Like, are we telling people to eat real food? Now, saying eat real food, maybe that means, well, you're not going to eat ultra-processed food because you're not eating real food, but we're not stating the obvious, right? To say, don't eat ultra-processed food. That's what I'd rather hear. Yes?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and a nicer way to say that would be, are you sure you're not paying for marketing? Right? I mean, there's a lot of people who want to do the right thing and support the right causes. And so one of the things that I think about as well, even for a can of beans, right? If I go home and I make a cup of beans, I'm not paying for marketing. I bought those beans bulk. They were just harvested and dried and sold to me, as opposed to paying for the marketing of beans in a can, right?
Yeah, and all the distributors in between as well, right?
Exactly. And so you can look at it that way too, and almost frame it in a positive way of don't support unnecessary marketing, right? Don't spend extra money that you don't need to on packaging and marketing and all of that hoopla. Stick to the basics.
Yeah, but you know, and understand, right? Where is real food? Where is processed food? And do we start to, you know, we kind of lose sense of that, right? But I use the protein powder. But the protein powder is there because I'm going to work out and I need that and I need something quick and I'm going to make that smoothie in the morning. That's not real food. Mm-hmm. Yes, but they're not, but they're, you know, so we say avoid highly processed foods. You know, or we say, you know, choose foods. This is classic United States government, right? Choose foods that are low in saturated fat. Like, what's that? Why can't you just tell me what I shouldn't be eating? Or maybe we need to focus our attention on removing the ultra-processed foods, right? So it's really sort of the language that's in there, right? It's language.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Who are we going to blame, right? It's not really the evidence. It's the consequences, and it's how we want to frame that. So if the United States actually said, right, ultra-processed foods are harmful, and they came out and said that, what would that mean? That'd be a big deal with school lunch program. What would we have to do with the school lunch program?
Well, would it, though? I mean,
do you know what is motivated by people that set up the school lunch program? What motivates them?
But is that ultra processed? I mean, I feel like it's just overcooked and overly seasoned. Like the worst thing that I've ever seen in a school lunch lately has been like really peeled apples in a plastic bag. You know what I mean? That are browning. I don't know that they have ultra. I mean, I guess I'm thinking of like potato chips. Is the school lunch including potato chips?
I don't know.
Like,
are they doing French
they
fries?
They might have overly salted, overly margarined, what do you call those? Mashed potatoes. But I don't know that they have, you know, I think their biggest crime is overly seasoning and
tater tots?
Things.
Pizza? Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah, but again, I mean, it's cheese and it's pepperoni and it's,
did they make
sauce.
The pizza, or did they get it? Somebody else made it and froze it for them, and then they're just cooking it. What are they doing? How much are they making themselves? And I don't know. I think that that's a big issue. And mm-hmm. schools are certainly financially motivated. School lunch program. I'm going to buy things in bulk. Who's going to give me the best price?
Right.
And again, as long as it fits what the criteria are, then it's fine, right? So we start.
Well, like you heard that big hoopla years ago that the tomato in the tomato
ketchup,
sauce counts as a vegetable,
yeah,
so therefore
right.
pizza is a vegetable.
I got you. Ketchup's a vegetable.
Right. But this was pizza sauce, like on a pizza. They were counting it as part of your vegetable.
I know. And what's in that pizza sauce?
Yeah, right, sugar, undoubtedly.
Well, even more than sugar, is there any preservatives in there? Is there, you know, emulsifiers in there? Is there, I mean, that's where we got to start driving down on that and say that's not acceptable to serve to a child. And again, that's the consequence of then saying ultra-processed foods are harmful. They need to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a true statement, but again, you know, this is the political speak here, right? The policy statement kind of thing, right? That would be...
Right. What can they say?
Yeah, what can they say, and what are we blaming it? And again, the more that we can kind of use vague language, the better, And eat real food is good, but is that good enough, right? I mean, and again, is there a conversation to start arguing about meat and plants and saturated fat and fiber and sugar? Though, you know, sugar is used in a lot of things, but, you know, or is it just like, let's get the processed foods out of there? And whether you're eating a bean or whether you're eating red meat, it doesn't make any difference. But what about a hot dog? Hot dog's super processed red meat. Oh, but it's a natural hot dog. Natural hot dog? I mean, we go to the co-op and buy natural hot dogs. What's natural about it? You look
less
at that
sugar
ingredient
and
list.
Less preservatives.
Yeah, maybe, but there's still stuff in there. You know,
right.
So again, I mean, that's what we mean when we say eat real food, but this is, you know, open for interpretation, yes. And then perhaps the other big deal with this is that the implications with the industry, right, with the food industry. So these are problems that can't be fixed by just saying, oh, well, we'll take the fat out, or oh, we'll take the sugar out, or we'll take the sodium out. I mean, fat, salt, sweet, we point the finger at that, but inherently that's, we're not saying anything about the chemicals there, right? And now we yeah. debate about which fat is good and which fat is bad, right? And which sugar, how much sugar is allowed, and is sugar bad, is it evil? And oh, is honey okay? What about maple syrup? Instead of just asking the question, and how processed is it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, you know, and then you threaten the industry, right? That there's product categories that now go bye-bye, right? This is the clean label thing. You know, clean label? I think we've maybe alluded to that before.
Yeah, yes.
So clean label, you look at the label, it says citrus fiber on it. You're like, oh, it's got fiber in it. It's from oranges, right? Ah, this is good for me. Nah, 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 nah. It's a chemical that's derived from citrus fiber, but it's not citrus fiber. Plus citrus fiber, I mean, how do you get citrus fiber? Am I going to sit and zest an orange? Is that how I get the citrus fiber? I pick off the pith, and I actually have to use the pith. The pith is what I want. But wait a minute, when I peel my grapefruit, I want to get rid of that pith. Oh, wait, I'll just put that in a little thing, and oh, that's citrus fiber. Ah, oh, gosh, right? I mean, just put the grapefruit in there. Why am I not just eating grapefruit? If I want fiber, why am I just not eating beans? Beans are a great source of fiber. You want to increase your fiber? Eat beans. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? But I take fiber in a powder form, right? I got to take mycelium, or I got to take, you know, my acacia fiber or whatever. You, again, you know, this is the idea that, you know, how far do we go? Where do we get this, right? And then the problem is you got the lobbying, of course, right? So lobbying is super powerful in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then we would like to leave it in nutrient-centered, because then the food industry can say, oh, well, we've improved the product. I mean, this is fantastic. It's like buying low-sodium, like chicken broth, right? I buy chicken broth at times.
Yeah.
I generally make my own. I know how to do that, but I still have the, you know, the cartons of, you know, chicken broth. And is it a real food? Is it not a real food? Tons of sodium in that, right? And is sodium the bad guy? I don't know, but, you know, I'd rather have one that has less sodium in it. So you go buy the low sodium, and you're like, oh, it's low sodium. But it's really not low sodium. Right, I mean, the normal, I just looked at this too, this is why I know this. I think the chicken broth has 550 milligrams of salt, and the low sodium has like 400 milligrams of sodium. I mean, like, that's low sodium? Wow. It's lower sodium, but compared
added?
To what? Yeah, they add it because added? It's a preservative. Are you kidding me?
Oh, right.
You got to
right.
preserve
like,
that.
Why,
you got to
like,
shelf
why would they
life.
Add it? They could say salt-free, but you're right. They would need to preserve it.
But honestly, Christine, I'd rather have salt added rather than some of these other things that they're adding.
Yeah, sodium chloride, or, I mean, what's the weird, potassium chloride or something like that?
Well, yeah, that's just another form of, if you want chloride, you could get it in potassium chloride versus sodium chloride. But now we're starting to go down chemical road, right? At least salt is something I use in my kitchen. And yes, salt will raise your blood pressure. How bad is it? We could spend some time on that as well, right? But this is certainly an issue, right? An issue that I feel is not like critically addressed in the dietary guidelines, right? How are we time-wise? We have like a minute, is that right?
Yeah, we do. We do. I was going to ask if you thought there would be a part two.
Yeah, there's probably part two, part three. I didn't talk about alcohol at all. I didn't talk about Brazil. I want to talk more about Brazil. I love their guidelines. Yes, their guidelines. And again, what's their incentive? It's just different. They don't have like, well, I don't think like the professional researchers there. They have public health people, but they don't really have lots of infrastructure for research and looking at nutrients and, you know, driving down on that. I mean, that's sort of my sense of that. But oh my gosh, your guidelines are just straightforward. I love it because it's cultural. But yeah, that's a whole nother. That's an hour on that. So maybe we'll just end with that ultra-processed food thing, right? And I'll just make a little distinction there, right? So understand that ultra-processed foods are things that you can't make at home, right? You can't put these things together. You can't do it in your kitchen. If you can't mm-hmm. do it in your kitchen, perhaps you shouldn't be eating it, yes? And if it's an added ingredient in something, you shouldn't be eating that. Real food means that you're buying the food by itself and eating it. And if it's, you know, ribeye steak, so be it. And maybe the scientists have a problem with you eating ribeye steak. But boy, eating ribeye steak versus some plant-based, you know, protein burger that you're going to eat, oh my gosh, better choice. Right. So,
And ask yourself about convenience. Is it truly convenient to be eating poor quality foods that eventually you're going to have the inconvenience of seeing, you know, a doctor or a naturopath for an issue that you're creating because you're not eating well? You're not, you know, you're going for convenience now, but will it be convenient later?
Yeah. You gotta spend time in the kitchen. You gotta cook food. You gotta do dishes.
Shortcut.
Right? There's no shortcut. I'm learning that I love doing dishes. It's like meditation for me, right? And I'm like, I have dishes to do. I can be grateful, and it's just like I can make it kind of a calming sort of thing. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm working on that, right? That, I mean, spending time in the kitchen, super, super, super important. Anyways, I think that's a good place to close.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for supporting WDRT, listener-supported 91.9 on your radio dial. You've been listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rete and Christina DeRocher, and we'll see you next month.
Okay. Bye-bye, Christina. Thank you.
Good care, Paul. Thank you.